Good morning, everybody. This meeting of the Arizona Board of Physical Therapy is recorded. It's 8:30 a.m. on Tuesday, December 17th, 2024. Dr. Bastillo, after you call the meeting to order, we'll do a roll call of the board members and staff and proceed with the reading of the board's mission statement.
Great. Good morning and happy holidays to all in attendance. I'd like to call the December 17th, 2024 regular session PT board meeting to order.
Thank you. Dr. Bastillo.
Dr. Hike, can I have you read the mission statement, please?
Sure.
But let's do a
roll call
first.
I'm here.
Thank you. Dr. King.
Present.
Mr. Leone.
Here.
Mr. Greer.
Here.
Mr. Barton.
Here.
Dr. Hike.
Here.
And board staff, Monica Crowley.
Here.
Ms. Bryant.
Here.
Ms. Richardson.
Present.
Dr. Sinish.
Here.
And my name is Judy Chepius. And now, Dr. Hike, if you'll proceed with the mission statement.
All right. The mission of the Arizona Board of Physical Therapy is to protect the public from the incompetent, unprofessional, an unlawful practice of physical therapy. The Arizona Physical Therapy Practice Act establishes the standards for practice of physical therapy, continuing competence in testing, and defines the scope and limitations of practice. The board licenses qualified applicants as physical therapists and physical therapist assistants and receives, investigates, and adjudicates complaints against licensees.
Great, thank you.
Dr. Bastillo, the meeting is yours.
The first item for business is to approve the minutes from our October 29th, 2024 regular session meeting. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes?
This is Mr. Martin. I've reviewed and moved that we approve the minutes.
Second.
Okay, I think we're
ready for the vote.
Ready.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda consisting of the regular session meeting minutes from the October 29th, 2024 board meeting. Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. We're looking at item four, applications for licensure, review consideration, and possible action on physical therapist applicants requesting ADA accommodation. First one is Lars Stoll. Is Mr. Stoll on the call?
Yes, I am.
Great. Thank you. Are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes.
Great.
Okay, Mr. Stowell chose to forego his ADA accommodation request in order to take the October NPTE exam based on the timeframes for approval to take the exam and his concern with availability of testing seats. He was not successful on the NPTE exam on October 30th, and he's now requesting ADA accommodations for his second attempt at testing. Attached to the memorandum was the licensure and certification application and the ADA accommodations request. He's requesting additional time of time and a half and a separate room. So the board's asked to review the information to determine whether the applicant shall be granted the testing accommodations requested for the NPTE and the jurisprudence exam. If the board approves the request, Mr. Stowell will be allowed to complete the application process by registering and taking both exams and processing of his application once all documentation is finalized, including exam scores, transcripts, and all other documentation of the application. So this matters for your review.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Stoll?
Mr. Stoll, this is Joshua Greer. Thank you for being here today. What we really need to know, we've read the what you provided to the board. You know, outside of education, can you just tell us how your condition affects your daily life functions, including any accommodations that you have received outside of education? So accommodations with prior employment during your clinical rotations, accommodations that you have on a day-to-day basis. Just explain to us in your own words how your condition affects you on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, sure. First of all, thanks for having me and taking the time to kind of go over my case. In regards to kind of affecting my day-to-day life, mainly being dyslexic, just affects, you know, things, how I read, how I write. This was a kind of broadened my learning curve, I thought, in terms of all my rotations. So just kind of having to, you know, if there was a documentation period, I always kind of, you know, at least for that first couple of weeks, to kind of ask for just a little bit longer time to kind of get it done, as long as it was still within the, you know, regulations of the actual, you know, clinic and the state. So, just things, you know, if I'm just reading a daily book or just kind of going about writing, some notes, you know, I'm writing words backwards or just kind of flipping words around, and, you can kind of, I have a notebook and I just have so many scribbles on it just because I mess up so many times and have to rewrite something. So, that just kind of goes with the writing and the reading. In terms of, the ADD aspect of it and just the kind of, you know, it might just make things a little bit longer for me to kind of to process and kind of learn on my own. But outside of that, it's really just something that I kind of have lived with all my life and just kind of come to accept. If I communicate that clearly to whoever I'm working with or, you know, speaking with, then it's not ever really an issue.
Let's talk about your clinical rotations. Did I understand you that you asked for additional time outside of the normal parameters to complete your documentation?
No, it'd still be within the actual parameters, you know, that was at the clinic and within the state. But, you know, usually the expectation was you kind of finish your notes at work. But there was the option to take it home. And a lot of the times I was taking my notes home just to finish and make sure that they were up to the standard that I wanted.
And I just want to make sure I understood your testimony. So apart for the accommodations that you received in your education, which I see, you don't have any accommodations that you received at a prior job or, you know, going to the store, driving. You don't need any accommodations for those normal life tasks.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mr. Stoll, I'd like to go back to your clinical rotations for a moment. Mm-hmm. Did you carry a full patient load, or are we talking a partial patient load with your documentation?
I had a full patient caseload.
Okay. And you're able to get your notes done within, like, that 24-hour period or whatever the...
Yeah, I kind of had a template that worked for me after a while, mm-hmm. and that really helped me out. But, yeah, it took a while to ramp up to that point, but...
Great. Thank you.
Mr. Stoll, another thing that I noticed on the documentation you submitted is you had written that you have epilepsy on there. Mm-hmm. How does that affect you on a daily basis?
I think more so is the medication. I take a levetiracetam or Keppra. And I think it's just overall just like a neurodepressant, you know, so it just keeps everything kind of at a lower baseline for me. I think all the medications that I take regarding ADD, epilepsy, they kind of just, you know, again, like I said, just a big neurodepressor, doesn't affect really me too much day to day. I've been seizure free for a little over 6 years now, but it's a lifetime medication and just like a lifetime kind of, you know, things I got to take precautions on.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Stoll, this is Mr. Barton. So you mentioned at a couple of times that you spent extra time on your clinicals, and then you said that you didn't need any additional accommodations. I just want to make sure that we're clear about that. So when you said you didn't need any extra time, are you talking above like the kind of minimum standards for physical therapy? Did you need more time than other people? Did you have to take that documentation home to complete it? Where other people wouldn't?
No, I think I was still in the kind of the baseline, like the minimal requirement for documentation time. I guess what okay. I meant by that was, you know, there was other classmates and other friends that had a specific rotation before I did, and they were all able to kind of document. It was a home health one, for example, and they were all able to document on the road, kind of in between patients. And with me, I was the third and final rotation for this clinical instructor. There was times where I was just taking, you know, the extra time after the day at the end of the day to kind of wrap everything up and finish it. And even sometimes take it home for that day, but it was still all within the standard, 48-hour window.
Okay. And was that because of an inability, or was that because of just a choice? It was easier, more convenient for you to do it at the end of your shift.
I would say more of an inability. Just you know, the words I was searching for at the time weren't coming, and okay. it just was easier to do at the end, I think, for me.
Is there anything like that in your outside of your educational experience where you need additional time or time apart from your day to complete kind of the normal life activities we all do?
Not necessarily. You know, things outside like, you know, the basics of learning like a new board game or card game or something might take me an extra couple playthroughs, but it really doesn't affect me day to day, just because okay. I've been so used to it, but.
Okay. So it doesn't slow like your ability to like read or follow instructions or anything like that on your day to day life.
I think reading is affected. Even just reading recreationally, I think it takes me longer than probably the average person. And I definitely want to reread a lot of pages, but, I would say probably reading and writing.
Okay. And tell me about let me kind of dig into that a little bit more with me. So it just goes slower. You have to reread pages. How does that affect you?
Yeah. So I think everyone suffers with that thing where you're kind of reading and you kind of don't really register what you read. So sometimes you have to go back a little bit. I think that happens to me quite often. So I really have to have like almost like a fidget or something in my hand, or I'm fidgeting with something. For some reason that helps a little bit, but I do tend to think read slower just in comparison to all my classmates throughout all my life, my girlfriend. It's just, you know, it's one to kind of read at a slower pace, but also to kind of take multiple attempts to read something for it to register in my head. So even with all these practice exams and questions and notes that I'm reading right now, it just takes me two or three read throughs to kind of fully click with my head.
Thank you.
Mr. Stoll, one more question for you. So, prior to PT school or anything like that, and just jobs that you've had throughout your life, were there any other accommodations that were needed to be made in order for you to perform your job duties anywhere else?
I can't say there was. I was pretty independent. I basically just worked as a physical therapy tech and then as a personal trainer for more than any other job. And I was pretty independent in both of those. So I never really came across as having to read or do any excessive amount of writing. Fortunately, typing is easier than writing for me, but, even with like, you know, work, compliance things and stuff, you're watching videos and doing trainings and stuff. That was, you know, you had like all the time in the world that you need to do that. So it, you know, it, I kind of just did those, with the time that I had and as needed.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Mr. Barton again. One more question. You mentioned that you were taking medication for all of these. Does the medication help you to control all these symptoms that we've discussed today?
I believe they do. It's we've been through some trial and error with some other medications, way back when I first started it all.
Sure.
But I think what's working now is probably the closest it'll get in terms of, you know, what me and my psychiatrist have discussed.
Okay. And do you feel that your symptoms right now, that the need to reread things and the distractibility is well controlled via the medications you currently use?
Sorry, do I feel like it's caused by the medication or?
No, do you feel like it's well controlled by the medication you use?
Yeah, to an extent. I don't know if there's ever going to be something or a medication to help me kind of, you know, when I'm, you know, taking a test or really trying to focus in on something and the most minuscule noise or something like a sneeze or a water bottle making a noise really just kind of just takes me out of it so quick. I'm not sure a medication will help with that, but I will say like the soundproof headphones that I wore in the first exam helped a lot. And I never really had those before. So that was cool to have.
Okay. And you were able to use those, I believe, last time without any kind of an accommodation, right?
Yeah, those were there.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Do we have a motion?
This is Mr. Greer. I move to deny the request. I don't see a disability that affects the daily life function as set forth in the Americans with Disability Act. So for those reasons, I move to deny that request.
King second.
Any discussion?
This is Mr. Oh, go ahead. Dr. Hyde, go ahead.
I was concerned about the professional advice that was given to us that didn't include the diagnosis that Mr. Stoll just described. And so I'm not sure in terms of the combination of medications would, like you said, kind of calm things down and, you know, perhaps impair his ability to think more so than just the one diagnosis. So I didn't see that in the professional letter in terms of their the combination of medications. So I think that's a little bit different in terms of our review. So I want to bring that forward because I think the combination of both conditions would impair his ability to be able to process, even though he's not mentioning anything that he's gotten used to the medications for epilepsy. And then you combine the ADHD or ADD medication. And I think that the two together could absolutely impair his thinking on test taking. And he's accommodated, as he said, in his daily life activities, which I understand. So I'm inclined to disagree.
And I hear you, Dr. Hike, but you know, what he told us is that it is only in education that he needs any accommodation, and that isn't a disability. It's a diagnosis, but it's not a disability. A disability affects a daily life function. And, you know, Mr. Stoll, fortunately, doesn't need somebody to sit by him while he's driving and make sure he remains attentive on the road. He doesn't need someone to come with him to go to the store. You know, he didn't even need additional time in his clinical rotations. And so you know, I don't dispute that he has a diagnosis, but I don't think that rises to the level of disability. Our job is to ensure access to the test, not to ensure success. I think everyone would do better if they had additional time, and that's not our purpose.
I agree. I just think he's gotten used to his disability.
And Dr. Hike, I did have that concern at the beginning, and that's why I asked kind of a lot of the questions that I did. You know, the thing that I think is pushing me towards denying this particular accommodation is, you know, when we spoke to Mr. Stowell, he is using medications. He's been working on getting those stabilized, and he feels like they work. And if those medications work and he's not having the problems that were resulting in, you know, needing the additional time he talks about, then we go back to the standard, right? And the standard is a limitation of a significant daily function. And I'm inclined to agree with Mr. Greer here, where when I look at that, we asked about driving, we asked about reading outside, and there's not a significant impairment in any of those areas. And the only impairment that I did hear that he was still easily distracted, it sounds like it's resolved with noise canceling headphones. And so given that, that's kind of where I am. I see the concern. I think there's definitely something there, but it sounds like it's managed. And if it is currently managed, then I don't think there's a limit to access. And again, our obligation is to ensure access to the test.
I'd kind of like to get everybody's, especially the PTs, your thoughts on this. So it felt like Mr. Stowell kind of downplayed what was going on with his clinical rotation. What I'm hearing is that he was not capable of getting his documentation done during work hours. To me, that's not a normal thing. That's not something that should be going home with you. You should be able to get that done within your work hours, whether somebody takes their stuff home by choice or not. You know, that's kind of on them whether they want to do that. But what I'm hearing is that he wasn't capable of doing his notes during the time that he was at work. And I look at that as an accommodation. I look at that as his work telling them it's okay for you to take those notes home and get them done. You know, there's still a 48-hour time frame that he has to get them done, and that's totally fine, but he's working off the clock essentially to get his documentation done because of an incapability of getting them done while he's at work. That to me rises to the level of an accommodation in my mind.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you on that, Mr. Leone. I feel like Dr. Hike was saying he's accommodated to his difficulties. And I do believe it, certainly his epilepsy medication is a neurodepressant, and that can impair your ability to, you know, quickly process things that need to be processed. So I agree, is a little bit outside of some of the things that we normally see for ADA requests.
I think for me, the question would be, and we can certainly ask him if he's still on the call, it's not unusual for students, you know, first in a rotation, especially home health, right, where it's just go, 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 to need time to get their documentation done outside of patient care. But was there any point during that rotation that he was actually able to get it done during the treatment day and not take it home? Or did it stay taking it home the entire time?
Yeah, I can answer that. I think as the rotations were ending, especially the home health one, I had enough kind of history and familiarity with the documentation system that I was able to kind of complete all of the patients for the day, at least in the last 2 weeks. But it took me a while to get there, and I think it took longer than my peers to get there, but I think by the end I was able to.
And I appreciate you answering that. Thank you. And I think that that's, it's a hard one, right? You said, Karen, because that's not unusual. It's a learning curve. You know, new documentation, home health, right? And so it's hard to know, was it just navigating a new EMR or was it actually a part of an impairment? It sounds like he was able to accommodate it. The test itself is high stakes. And the hard thing about these, sometimes these questions about where else does it affect you in your life? The question would be, what other high stakes situation are you in that it affects you? Because, you know, you can take your time to read the grocery list. You don't have to get it done in, you know, 5 minutes. You have to get 200 items in 4 hours. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's, so what other high stakes situation would this maybe affect? Maybe travel, maybe getting to the airport, navigating flight changes, you know, I mean, all kinds of things that actually have time limits on them, versus just affecting you in different parts of your life, right? And so these are the harder ones, I think, that we face. It looks like he did attempt and was not successful his first time. As I was reading your application, it looks like you would have applied, or maybe you did apply and chosen to rescind that application for ADA because you were worried about a seat. Is that, am I reading that correct?
Yeah, correct. By the time I would have met with you guys in October, it would have been two or three weeks out from the actual test date. So I was worried about the seat availability.
Sure.
I did get the performance feedback, I guess, from the first attempt on the NPTE, and I did run into the case of running out of time, which I'm sure happens to a lot of people, but I did see in sections 4 and 5 that were my worst sections because I was actually actively rushing during that time. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to kind of mention that.
Thank you. And what I appreciate about that is that we're not talking about an applicant who took the exam, failed, and then thought, well, maybe I'll apply for an ADA accommodation. He already had an application in because of a concern. So it's not an easy one. I'm not sure really how I'm going to vote. I love to second so that we can have these great discussions, but I don't think this is as cut and dry as some of the others that we have.
And getting back to your comment, Dr. King, I think that's the misunderstanding that a lot of applicants have is they think, oh, I can't do this test thing, but that's not what a disability is. A disability is I'm blind. I can't see. I need someone with me to go to the grocery store. It doesn't matter how high stakes it is. It's I can't see. And so I need an accommodation to provide me access to this test that without this accommodation, I would not be able to take the test. The question is not whether they would do better with the accommodation. It's whether they have access to the test. And, you know, here we need to be saying, is his disability so great that without giving him extra time, he doesn't have access to the test? And I don't think in this case we can find that because there really is no other impairment in his life. Fortunately, and that's a good thing. And, you know, oftentimes we see these applicants come in here and we ask them that question, what is the impairment? And I think they're wondering that they think we're evaluating their fitness to be a physical therapist. And there is this tendency to downplay, because they don't want to be perceived that, oh, I can't do the job. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, that's not what we're looking at right now. We're looking at whether do you have access to the test? And when I hear someone saying, yeah, it took me a little longer to get the documentation, but I got it done, and I didn't have to ask my employer for accommodation. I didn't have to ask any employer for accommodation. He's got a diagnosis, but I don't think he has a disability that affects his ability to access the test.
Yeah. Question on that, and we can discuss another time, maybe, but when I'm thinking about access to the test, and I'm just curious about your thoughts on in this situation, access to the test would mean access to all of the questions. And so if someone who has a disability cannot get through all of the questions because of their dyslexia or their reading issues, and there's a part of the test they actually don't have access to because they've run out of time because of that disability, would that be part of what we're talking about as far as access to the entire test?
Yes, but I think that would have to be supported by something outside of the test, because we cannot evaluate a disability just on the test.
Yeah, good point.
But if you saw that, hey, Mr. Stovall always needs to have somebody with him while he's driving, because he drives 35 miles per hour on the freeway because he's so worried about getting distracted. And then I think he could make a credible argument that I don't have access to the test because my mental process is so slow in dealing with this, and it's demonstrated in other aspects of my life that I do have a disability that affects a daily life function. Here, I don't see the evidence of it.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay. Thank you for this discussion. I think it was very robust and very helpful. Are we ready for the question? We have a motion.
I think we're in discussion on a motion.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we have a motion and a second. So whenever you're ready.
I think we're ready.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to deny Lars Stovall's request for ADA accommodations of time and a half in a separate room. Dr. Vestia?
Yes.
Dr. King?
No.
Mr. Leone?
No.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
No.
Judy, I voted incorrectly. I'm sorry. I meant to vote yes to decline or no to accept. So it's a yes. My vote is a yes. I'm sorry.
Okay. So you to deny the request?
Correct.
You vote yes. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So just to clarify, that was 4 yes votes due to Dr. King's adjustment and 2 no votes. So that motion passes.
Good luck on the test, Mr. Stovall.
Thank you. Thanks for having the time.
The next person requesting ADA accommodations is Kenneth Shearer. Is Mr. Shearer on the call? Yes, Dr. Hike.
Sorry. I need to recuse myself from this case.
Okay.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we...
So attached to the memorandum was the licensure application and ADA accommodations request for Kenneth Shearer, who has unsuccessfully completed the NPTE exam 4 times without accommodations and is now requesting accommodations of additional time of time and a half. The board's asked to review the information to determine whether the applicant shall be granted testing accommodations requested for the NPTE and or AZ Law jurisprudence exam. If the board approves the request, Mr. Shearer will be allowed to complete the application process and test with accommodations and will be approved following completion of the application process as well as receiving transcripts and examination scores. The matter's for your review.
Mr. Shearer, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes, I am.
Mr. Shearer, did you hear the prior discussion that we just had?
Yes, I did.
Can you, in light of what we said, can you explain to us how your disability affects the daily life function? So that we can provide you this accommodation.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know if you, y'all read my sheet. So yeah, PTSD and anxiety relate to that. So with day-to-day life, just relationships with that, especially intimate relationships, just being able to focus on those or like conversations, loud noises or unexpected areas, I feel stressed in. That really heightens things up and have to refocus my attention. So yeah, the PTSD really when I'm stressed with things, it reminds me of those previous experiences when I'm in that deployed environment. So that happens every day. And then during the testing process, that extra stress with the time constraint, especially, I don't have time to refocus my attention and just go spiraling down those prior events, those prior memories. So that's kind of where it affects me both in my daily life and also in the specific testing instance.
Anything else? Have you received accommodations? I noticed you did not receive accommodations in any of your education. Did you receive accommodations in any of your clinical rotations or any other part of your life post 2017?
Throughout all my testing, I feel I've had adequate time. For example, during PT school, we'd have 2 hours for tests, and be one of the last ones to finish, but only take an hour 30 minutes. So never seen the need to ask for those, and also kind of that pride also coming from that hard-headed military background. It kind of felt too prideful to ask for that. It kind of felt like being inadequate asking for those services. And yeah, the times are in those stressful situations. I think Kelly was talking about it, where you have time at the grocery store. You have time other places, but like in airports or large crowds, I get that stress. During the GRE, MPTE, get that stress and kind of spiral out. So yeah, like I said, in my previous education, haven't needed those because I've been given that adequate amount of time.
So has anything in your life changed between the time where you felt you didn't need an accommodation to now, or is it just the fact that you've taken the test 4 times and has anything changed?
Well, yeah, like I said, those stressors have changed. I deployed in 2017, so all my prior college, high school, all that wasn't affected by that until I came back from that deployed environment. This isn't a cop out for needing more time. Like I said, this isn't a cop out for it. It just identified it more in those stressful situations. And in real life, I can't get accommodations. I can't get more time at the airport unless I get there earlier. I can't get more time. I just have to refocus my attention and think off the cuff and make the best of that environment.
Okay, I don't have any further questions.
Mr. Scherer, staying away from test taking situations or anything like that, can you give some specific examples of what typically will occur in everyday life activities that you do when those memories of what's causing the PTSD start to kick in? So, you know, whether that's when you go out somewhere, whether that be the store, you mentioned the airport, if you're, you know, out with family, whatever the case might be, can you give some specific examples about kind of what occurs?
Yeah, I'll give one without trying to dive too much into it so I don't think about it even more than I need to. One example, I was in Vegas and in a big crowd, and a metal banister fell down, and in my background, it sounded like gunshots. And in that instant, grabbed my wife, grabbed people around me, and tried to find cover, and just got very stressful in that, and had to refocus about a minute and realize that that wasn't going on. And kind of, say, 5-10 minutes, kind of had to lower my heart rate, become more relaxed. But like situation like that, where I hear something loud that sounds like a blast, that sounds like a gunshot, just really puts me down in that spiral.
Okay. How about in like work situations? So whether it be a job that you've performed after your tour of duty, prior to PT school, or your clinical rotations, while you were in PT school, what are some examples of things that potentially have happened that can cause the PTSD to kind of overtake everything?
I'd say one of my clinicals was at Walter Reed Hospital, a military hospital. So speaking with those soldiers, those airmen, trying to have that empathy and that relationship with them. But when we're both talking about the same thing, trying not to think about it, or trying to think about in the case where I can help my patient. But in those situations, they bring up those memories, whether they're getting treated for a concussion or amputee. And then I start to think about that and go into that spiral. So I'd say in my clinicals and as a PT with that, when I'm being brought up different things, that's when it starts to come up.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Scherer, it's Kelly King. During your attempts at the exam, did you use some of the noise-canceling headphones that the prior applicant had mentioned?
Yeah, I used the noise-canceling, but like I said, sometimes the door would close too loud and the camera wouldn't change that. Mm-hmm. And that loud smack, that would bring up that similar sound like I was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Were you aware of any particular questions on the exam that triggered you, created a panic exam?
No, I've taken practice test questions talking about traumatic amputees, concussions, but on the test itself, I don't remember any traumatic. It would just say this amputee, but won't really relate to what it's about.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Do we have a motion?
This is Mr. Greer. I move to deny the ADA request. Once again, I don't see a disability that affects the daily life function as required by the Americans with Disabilities Act.
King second.
Any further discussion?
Joshua, I just want to know, what do you guys normally do approve? Because you're saying access to the test, but it sounds like if you are taking an MPTE, you're not blind, you're an able person. So I just want to know what situations are being approved for this.
Well, and that's a problem that we see, is we see a lot of students, and this doesn't apply to you, but a lot of applicants who have received accommodations all through their education, because the schools appear to be much more willing to provide them than we are. But we are looking for something that affects a daily life function. And, someone who needs a seeing eye dog, an accommodation where I need someone to read the questions to me, that would be an accommodation that we're willing to consider. We have considered accommodations for disabilities similar to your in the past, but usually they're accompanied by a daily life impairment or something that you have a non-educational accommodation in your life. That's what we're looking for. How does your condition affect your ability to do the things that a normal person would able to do without an accommodation? And that's what we're looking for. In your case, you passed PT school without any accommodations. That's laudable. You have a doctorate level degree. It's difficult to see a disability unless there's something that has changed in your life since you passed PT school, which I didn't hear that there was. So that's the reason for the motion.
Any further discussion? Okay, Judy, I think we're ready.
It's been moved and seconded to deny Kenneth Shearer's request for ADA accommodations of time and a half. Dr. Bastille?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
No.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Good luck, Mr. Shearer. I hope it goes well for you.
I hope so, too. I wish Dr. Hike was here because he can understand my situation. But I guess it's hard to talk to civilians about this, and I wish you guys can have more appreciation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and we're going to be moving on to 4B, physical therapist applicants who graduated from a foreign educational program. Our first one is Ian Miguel Aysen.
Present.
So the board received the application for Ian Miguel Aysen, a foreign educated physical therapist who graduated from a program that is not U.S. accredited by the Commission on Accreditation of Physical Therapy Education, or CAPTE. Mr. Aysen's foreign education was found to be substantially equivalent through educational credentialing. It's important to note that Mr. Aysen was previously presented in February 2023 and April of 2024 board meetings, at which time the board approved it. The application is being presented again after submitting a new application. The previous application was withdrawn after the third failed attempt at the NPTE exam. The board is requested to review the credentialing evaluation in light of requirements in ARS 32-2022 and AAC R424-203A and R424-101-12. So the board again has previously approved his education as substantially equivalent and allowed him to sit for the NPTE and AZ Law exams and required a supervised clinical practice period. So at this point, the board must make the following determinations: whether the education is substantially equivalent to that of a U.S. educated graduate. I apologize. I'm hearing some feedback. I'm not sure which line that's coming from. If Mr. Aysen's education is found substantially equivalent, the board may choose to license and require a supervised clinical practice period and determination of approval to sit for the NPTE and AZ Law exams. The matter is for your review.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Dr. King.
Super quick question. In reviewing the FCCPT evaluation of education, and I don't know that I've noticed this before, but it looks as though the education is equivalent to a master's degree. And I'm wondering, because, you know, the education is certainly different now for PTs who graduate from CAPTE accredited programs as a doctorate, and it just makes me wonder if it actually isn't equivalent to a doctoral degree.
Well, that question is wrapped around the idea that the Arizona Board, per rule, requires the use of the coursework tool 5. Which is not the most current version. It is the one version that they put into rule. That's one of the things that the rules committee recommended that the board consider adjusting. So the credentials are evaluated under a more applicable coursework tool, which would be dependent upon the various graduation dates or various options rather than one specific. So at this point, foreign educations are credentialed using the coursework tool 5. So that's the terminology that's reflected for coursework tool 5.
Okay. Interesting. I mean, it does beg to, you know, the question, if there's been three attempts and not passing, of course, there's multiple factors involved in passing the test, but it does make you wonder if the content of the, his education actually isn't equivalent.
Yeah, I can see your point, Dr. King. However, you know, others do very well having been evaluated with the same coursework tool.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts, Dr. Bustillo?
Truthfully, since he has been previously approved, I don't see any reason to deny that we have previously approved his education as being equivalent and allowed him the opportunity to test and then take a supervised clinical practice period should he pass.
Yeah, agree with you.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree as well. I think, you know, I'm spending some time going through this, but it looks like it's pretty, I mean, there seems to be line for line coursework in the same area. And, you know, obviously this individual struggled a little bit with the exam, but I don't think that changes what the coursework is or whether it's equivalent.
So I will make a motion that we accept Mr. Aysen's education as substantially equivalent, allow him to sit for the MPTE and AZ Law, and should he pass those, do a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours.
Second.
Any further discussion?
Okay.
I think we're ready, Judy.
It's been moved and seconded to approve Ian Miguel Aysen's education as substantially equivalent, allow him to sit for the NPTE and AZ Law exam, and to require a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Good luck to you, Mr. Aysen.
Thank you so much.
Our next person on the list is Shakshi Shah.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So the board received the application for foreign educated applicant Shakshi Shah, who graduated from a program that is not U.S. accredited by CAPTE. Her foreign education was found to be substantially equivalent through educational credentialing. So board staff is requesting a review of the credential evaluation in light of the requirements of ARS 32-2022-E3, AAC R424-203-A, and R424-101-12. The board is asked to make the following determinations, whether according to board rule, is this applicant's education substantially equivalent to that of a U.S. educated graduate? If the education is found to be substantially equivalent, the board may choose to license or the board may require a supervised clinical practice period and determination of approval to sit for the NPTE and AZ Law exams.
Any discussion? Then I will move to accept Isha's education as substantially equivalent, allow her to sit for the MPTE and AZ Law, and require a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours should she pass.
Second.
Any other discussion? Okay. I think we are ready.
It's been moved and seconded to approve Shakshi Shah's education as substantially equivalent, allow her to sit for the NPTE and AZ Law, and to require a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Best of luck to you, Ms. Shaw.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we are now on to item 3, review, consideration, and possible action regarding supervised clinical practice period facility and supervising PTs proposed by the foreign educated physical therapist applicant, Philip Edmondson.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Edmondson was found substantially equivalent at the board's October 1st, 2024 meeting and was issued a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours. Mr. Edmondson submitted an agreement for a supervised clinical practice period to be approved. The primary supervisor is Matthew Sparrow, PT, and the secondary supervisor is Keith Fisher, PT. The facility is Contact Physical Therapy, which is located on Broadway in Tucson, Arizona. The board must now determine whether to approve the facility and primary and secondary supervisors.
Does anyone have any concerns over Mr. Edmondson's?
Okay. I move to approve. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. No, that's great.
I would move to approve the facility and the primary and secondary supervisors for the clinical practice or supervised clinical practice period.
Second.
All right. It's been moved. I'm sorry. Was there more discussion? Okay. It's been moved and seconded to approve the supervised clinical practice period facility and supervising physical therapists proposed by Philip Edmondson. Dr. Bastille?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Okay, down to number C, review, consideration, and possible action on physical therapist or PTA applicant under ARS 32-2028, Larry Hernandez.
So Mr. Hernandez submitted an application that was provided for your review. Mr. Hernandez has also been previously licensed as a PTA in Arizona. The matter is brought to you under this agenda item because Mr. Hernandez does not currently hold any other active licenses in the U.S. So as a result, he disclosed on his application an affirmative response to the background questions, and his previous licensure spanned 2009 and expired on August 31st of 2020. Mr. Hernandez is applying in accordance with ARS 32-2028B, which requires he demonstrate to the board satisfaction competency by satisfying one or more of the following: practicing for a specified time under an interim permit, completing remedial courses, completing continuing competence requirements for the period of the lapsed license, and passing an examination. Mr. Hernandez has provided evidence of 38 contact hours of continuing competence, and completion certificates were attached for board review. It should also be known that part of the application process, which has not yet been completed, but part of the application process does require that Mr. Hernandez pass the AZ Law Jurisprudence exam. So at this time, his background disclosure was provided for your review, and the board shall review the information to determine whether the applicant meets all requirements of ARS 32-2022 and 32-2028. The board must determine whether the applicant has demonstrated to the board's satisfaction competence for licensure upon completion of the application process and passage of the AZ Law Jurisprudence exam for reentry to practice. If the board determines the applicant has not sufficiently demonstrated competence for reentry to practice, or has not met the requirements for licensure and approval to take the exam, the board may order additional requirements for competency or deny the application. Additionally, the board is requested to review the disclosure information to determine if any other actions should be taken. this matters for your review.
Do we have thoughts or discussion?
Is Mr. Hernandez on the call? He's not here.
He had indicated that he was going to attend. I don't know if he's possibly muted. Mr. Hernandez, are you here, please?
I did see that. I think there was a I'm thinking of somebody different. Sorry.
He did identify the fact that his mother had been ill and was recovering from surgery, and he was helping with her care. That said, he also indicated that he would be here. So that's up to the board whether to proceed or to come back to this.
I think in my mind, and certainly correct me if I'm wrong, there seems to be a couple of issues. One is the application, of course, rate, and then the second one is the charges he has pending against him. So I guess he's just agendized today to first to approve, consider the approval of the CEUs and competencies that he's submitted in order for him to retake the jurisprudence. Is that correct?
He was placed on the agenda under normal circumstances with processing of an application with the background questions. This would have been a component of the consent agenda. Mm-hmm. However, given his previous licensure, his application by endorsement, and the fact that he does not currently hold another license, that brought him to this agenda item, because the license application is specific to 32-2028 that also has the additional feature of background questions associated with it. So the whole matter is for board review.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't practiced in 4 years, but he does have the required CEUs actually above and beyond what would be required for a PTA.
I wish he was here, because where's he going to be practicing? He hasn't practiced in 4 years. Is he in pediatrics? Is like, what's his area? You know, that it could really, is he going to home health where he's going to be on himself? Will he have a mentor or in a clinic where he's got other people? And so I would be more comfortable if I could speak with him about,
you want to bring him back,
plans are before approving him to take and pass potentially the exam and then get right back into practice. I don't know, is that just, maybe that's just me.
Well, we can table this and bring it back so we can speak with him.
And don't do it just because of me. I would just like to know what his plans are once he passes the jurisprudence. Where does he plan to practice?
Yeah, you have a valid point.
I agree. I think 4 years is a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to hear more from him.
Thanks, Josh. John, thank you.
He was informed that the board would likely have questions in this regard. And again, he did mention that he would attend today. If you'd like, we can reorder the agenda. I can have staff reach out to see if he truly is intending to attend, or we can just table it to another meeting. Your choice.
No, I think that would be ideal. That'd be that makes the most sense, though, that because we've already reviewed his things. So if he can join us at some point today, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And if not, then we move it to a different meeting.
Perfect.
Okay.
Monica or Phoenix, can one of you please reach out to him and determine if he's going to be attending?
Yes, I could do that.
And
thank you.
Clarification on timeframes so we can inform the board. Thank you, Phoenix.
Okay, so we will hold off on that one. So now we move to the consent agenda. which will include application for recommendation for a physical therapist and physical therapist assistant licensure regarding Leanna DeLeon, Michael Ibarra, Mackenzie Thompson, Denise Larson, Jacob Durham, McKelly Hammond, and Glenda Fisher. Is there anyone that anyone would like to pull off the consent agenda?
I move that we approve the items on the consent agenda.
Second.
Any other discussion? Okay, I think we're ready, Judy.
It's been moved and seconded to approve consent agenda items 5A and 5B. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes. Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Good luck to everyone on the list. I hope everything goes well for you.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Okay.
Thank you.
For those of you whose names read by Dr. Bastillo, if you, you're welcome to stay on the meeting, but you are free to go as well if you choose.
Okay, so the consent agenda is over. We have no administrative hearings or no informal hearings and no rehearings. We'll move on to agenda item number 9. Initial reviews and preliminary reviews. And so I do have a script that I'm going to read for that before we get started. This is the time and place scheduled for the board's initial review of complaints. There are 3 initial reviews and 7 preliminary reviews that will be heard pursuant to its authority under ARS 32-2045. For everyone's benefit, I will provide a brief summary on how the board conducts initial reviews. The summary applies to all cases that we will hear today, and I will not repeat it for each case. I will first begin with introductions. My name is Dr. Bustillo, and I am the board's chairperson. I will now ask the other board members to introduce themselves.
Hi, good morning. It's Kelly King, a professional member, vice president of the board.
Giovanni Leone, professional member, secretary of the board.
Joshua Greer, public member.
Joshua Barton, public member.
John Hike, professional member.
Thank you. For those participating in the initial reviews, please be aware that we have read all the materials submitted. If at any time it is necessary to refer to patients, please use initials only. In each case, the board will first hear a brief summary of the investigative report from its staff. Once staff is done, the board will ask the complainant, if present, if they wish to address the board, and then the board will ask the professional, if present, and their attorney, if represented, if they would like to do the same. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we ask those speaking not to take the time repeating information that the board has already received. You will be given the same amount of time to address the board that it took to present the investigative report, or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. Please keep in mind that this is not the time or place for the complainant and the professional to address each other. The board has a civility policy that prohibits the use of any type of disruptive conduct. Those violating the policy, after being given the opportunity to modify their behavior, will be removed from the meeting room. Once the board concludes its discussion with the parties, it will move into deliberations. While the parties are free to stay and listen to the deliberations, we ask that you respect the fact that we are now discussing amongst ourselves and request that you do not interrupt the process. The board's options include, but are not limited to, dismissing the complaint, taking non-disciplinary action such as issuing an advisory letter or order for continuing education, offering the professional a consent agreement, requesting the professional participate in an informal hearing, or remanding the matter to formal hearing. The board may also determine whether the matter warrants referral to any other agency or authority. Before we call the first case, I want to advise everyone that initial reviews are audio recorded. Accordingly, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that only one person speak at a time. Lastly, as a reminder to the board, this is not an informal hearing. If you have a few questions that will help you better understand the case and take action to potentially resolve the case through dismissal, non-disciplinary action, or a consent agreement for either disciplinary or non-disciplinary action, please feel free to ask them. However, if you have a number of substantive questions and or feel the case requires additional investigation or may warrant referral to any other agency or authority, it may be more appropriate to move this case to an informal hearing. Our first item is A, case 2407, Carly Hopkins, PT.
All right. This complaint was filed by a PTA who alleged that TMC at the Haven of Green Valley location did not have sufficient PT coverage to maintain supervision requirements for the PTAs. Haven of Green Valley had a traveling PT providing on-site supervision at the beginning of 2024. When the traveling PT left the facility at the end of March, the company had not hired a PT to replace her, and at the beginning of April, the facility began using telehealth for initial evaluations. The respondent in this case, Dr. Carly Hopkins, PT, was asked to complete initial evaluations for Haven of Green Valley via telehealth. And she was also asked to write discharge summaries and co-sign progress notes as assigned to her by the director of rehab, who is a PTA. When Dr. Hopkins wrote discharge summaries and co-signed progress notes that were written by the PTAs, her signature was the only physical therapist name in the patient's records during the first 2 weeks of April. During these 2 weeks, the PTAs were treating patients without a PT providing on-site or general supervision. The complainant believed that Dr. Hopkins was her supervising physical therapist, and if that was the case, the patients were treated well beyond the fourth visit without a PT doing a re-eval and providing fourth visit treatment. The allegation in this case was that Dr. Hopkins was doing telehealth evaluations but was not doing the fourth visit re-evals. Upon review of the complaint, the possible violations that were identified were ARS 32-2044, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist due to a deliberate or negligent act or failure to act, regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established, and ARS 32-2044-1, violating this chapter board rules or a written board order, and as it relates to R-424-303-F-4, a physical therapist who provides general supervision for a physical therapist assistant shall perform a reevaluation and provide each therapeutic intervention for the patient that is done on the day of the reevaluation every fourth visit or every 30 days, whichever comes first. Dr. Hopkins received a copy of the investigative report and submitted a supplemental response, which was included as Exhibit 14. And Dr. Hopkins is on the call this morning, and this matter is for your review.
Great. Thank you very much. Dr. Hopkins, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Hello, good morning. Yes, ma'am, I am.
Great, thank you for being here. Does anyone have any questions to start?
I have a question. Or sorry, Dr. King, it looked like you were about to ask one.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask Dr. Hopkins just to tell us just what are, is there anything in the investigative report that we're missing? What I'm reading is that she was co-signing notes, didn't see the patients, nobody was doing the fourth visit, unaware that she was supervising PT. So can you just tell us from your perspective briefly what happened?
Yes, ma'am. Well, I live in Phoenix, and I was at a building in Chandler, and providing general supervision to two PTAs, already. The TMC has multiple buildings within Arizona, over 20, I believe. And this facility had asked to do telehealth evaluations, non-billable discharges, and co-signing the progress notes. The director of rehab at the building was aware that I was already providing supervision to two PTAs and unable to take on anymore, nor was I asked, nor was it in my duty to that facility. So within those two, it wasn't every day that they needed assistance with the evaluations or discharges. Other than that, I had no point of contact, touch base with that facility.
And so did I read it correctly that you did not actually perform an evaluation by telehealth for any of those patients, or you did?
That is correct. None of those patients. No, ma'am.
And so can you help me understand why you were co-signing notes for patients who didn't see or know?
At the time, I, in good faith, believe performing that clerical task was a form of maintaining documentation compliance. Upon reflection, I do realize that that can be misconstrued to believe that I was also providing supervision of the plan of care, and I do know that it was incorrect to complete that task.
Have you completed or sought out any CEUs or education about supervision here in Arizona as a PT since this time?
I have looked into it a little bit, yes, ma'am. I have not done as much digging as I could have. I've actually went back and printed out all 95 pages of the statutes and laws and read through a lot of those as well, just in regards to the supervision. And just direct supervision versus general and things like that. So I am well aware of those, but as far as continuing education, no, ma'am.
Thank you.
Dr. Hopkins, this is Karen Bustillo. Do you know the PTAs that you are providing general supervision for in the Phoenix area?
Yes, ma'am. Monica Crayford and Carrie Avenega. I no longer provide supervision for them.
But you did at the time. And how did you ensure that they were appropriate to see the patients that you wanted them to see?
So I was going into that building 3 to 4 days a week. Those PTAs were going into the building 3 to 4 to 5 days a week. Any of those, we all kept in constant communication with each other regarding the patient cases. One of the PTAs I would actually see majority of the time in the building. The other one came in after her full caseload workday, come into that building. So we would all keep in consistent contact, and I would relay to them that patient was effective for PTA treatment. If they were not, I would not have allowed or deemed accessible.
Were the PTAs in that situation writing progress notes as well?
Yes, ma'am.
Dr. Hopkins, were you also signing off progress notes for those two specific PTAs that you were supervising?
Yes, I was.
Okay. When for either of the situations, and I guess more specifically for the situation that we're discussing in this case, was there a reason given to you of why you were to be signing off those progress notes for the PTAs? Was it specifically for supervision purposes? Was it for billing purposes? What was explained to you?
It was not explained to me.
Okay. So they just asked you, hey, can you sign these off? And then you just signed them off.
Right.
Okay.
So were you actually doing any of the progress notes or the reevaluations to update plans of care or goals?
For Green Valley, no, ma'am.
I understand not for Green Valley, but how about in your Phoenix location?
Yes, ma'am, I was.
All of them? I mean, all patients that are in your caseload in the Phoenix area, are you doing all of your own evaluations and progress notes, or are you signing off notes that are done by the PTAs?
It was just the one building in Phoenix, and their caseload was probably 20 patients tops. I did do the evaluations there as well as the discharges and progress notes.
So when you say that the PTAs in that specific building were doing progress notes, are you saying that they weren't doing progress notes for your patients, since you just specified that you're doing those progress notes, but they were doing them for other patients?
So they would do the progress notes. It requires a PT co-signing, so I would actually pull up the progress notes, assess, ensure that all of that was compliant, and also add in any other objective findings, anything like that, after I saw the patient.
Okay, so just so to clarify then, it sounds like the patient was on the PTA schedule for a progress note. The PTA saw that patient, but you still made your way over to that patient, did a quick evaluation of them on that progress note day. And what exactly were they documenting in their note then? Were they just documenting objective measures and then you were documenting the assessment of their progress? Or can you give a little explanation on that?
Sure. They would also, it would have the progress note, would have things like bed mobility, transfers, gait, things like that. Once I went in also and assessed the patient, I would assess all of those things just to ensure that they lined up with what the PTAs, has been seeing them and treating measure-wise, but also following back through that progress note just to ensure that all of the parameters that were listed in the progress note are accurate.
How about update of goals? Who was completing that, you or the PTAs?
The therapist does.
The PT?
The PT, correct.
Okay.
With their TMC has their own documentation system that doesn't allow for PTAs, I believe, to update goals. That may have changed since April, but then it would be up to the therapist to progress or modify the goals.
How about the assessment of progress? You know, just in the assessment section of the note, who was writing that?
The therapist has to write that.
The PT also?
Correct.
Okay.
I have one more question about your Phoenix work. How often are you actually seeing one of the people on your schedule? You start the evaluation. How many times a week are you seeing that patient versus how many times a week is the PTA seeing that patient?
Sure. So our the TMC platform that they use, there is a way to measure and keep track of supervision visits. So I would go into the building typically 3 to 4 times a week and look, see evaluations and also clientele and patient caseload that would require. So typically on that fourth visit, I was making sure that I actually saw each one of those patients.
Okay. And I guess my follow-up question to that is, are you as the PT deciding who's appropriate to be seen by the PTA, or if there is a patient that you feel should be seen by you, can they still be seen by you, or is that handled outside your realm?
I was there 3 to 4 days a week. So if there was a patient that I did not deem accessible to be treated by a PTA, I would absolutely ensure that I was in the building to treat them, whatever that frequency was.
Okay.
Great. And I want to just kind of backtrack to the other location that the case is regarding. So you were signing off the progress notes that the PTAs were completing there. Was this a completely different process than what is going on in your Phoenix office? Because in the Phoenix office, it sounds like you're there for the progress note. Even if that patient is scheduled with the PTA, you're seeing that patient at some point, doing a quick little evaluation, writing the assessment, updating the goals, all of that kind of stuff. Where it sounds like for the other location, that's not what was happening. The PTA was seeing the patient, writing the assessment, writing the goals, and then sending it to you for co-signature. Is that accurate, or was there a PT on the premises at some point seeing that patient on a progress note day?
From what I am aware of, which is not too much, I'm unsure if there was a PT on site. I'm not sure.
Okay.
And then along those lines, if you were using the TMC documentation system that you said triggered at every fourth visit needed to be by a PT, and you weren't there or not sure, am I hearing you say that the fourth visit was actually probably not done by a PT?
That is correct.
It seems that that two-week period was a stopgap where they used Dr. Hopkins' license, essentially, to cover themselves while they were waiting for another therapist to take a position.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm confused by that because, you know, she had a perfect example in the one clinic. And then she goes to a different clinic, and it sounds like the similar approach is being done, but the message not conveyed from what I hear from her boss at the Haven Health in Green Valley, that this is what you need to do here as well. And so I don't understand why she's thinking this is our model here, and we're not going to apply the same approach at a different location. So if you could explain that to me, Dr. Hopkins, I think that would help.
Yeah, could you explain that again one more time?
Sure. You have a model in Phoenix. You have EMR set up, and you have two PTAs that you're following, and it tells you specifically when your fourth visit is up. You're doing evaluations. You're doing everything that you're supposed to do from what we've heard. But now you go to a different location and you're not using that same example, that same model, that same EMR system, and the message is not conveyed from what you've said, from the manager to you, that you're supposed to follow the same approach you did at the Phoenix campus. So can you explain why?
It is the same EMR system. They use the same platform, things like that. They are also able to see how many times the patient has been seen, same exact way that I can. Mentioned on the progress notes, if that is one thing that I could take back, I absolutely would, because looking back, reflecting upon all of it over the past 8 months, I do realize and see where you guys are coming from in that regard. The director of rehab within that building. So my boss is technically the area manager within the Phoenix area. There is another area manager that covers the Tucson area who that director of rehab Green Valley reports to. I'm not sure who that is. I don't know who that is. But as far as the director of rehab, the model is still the same. It was not relayed, I guess, to other members, team members within the facility. I was unable to supervise. But the model of treating for X number of visits, however many past that fourth visit. I didn't take on the responsibility of supervising within that realm, and not overseeing that.
So just for clarity for with Dr. Hike, you were never physically present in the Glen Haven. You, all your visits that were telehealth.
Yes, ma'am. Correct.
It wouldn't have been the end of the world. It would not have been the end of the world.
Any other questions? I kind of feel that this case brings up a lot of issues, a lot of problems. I feel like, truthfully, I feel like Dr. Hopkins was put on the spot and kind of agreed to do something that she didn't know was going to be a problem. And I'm grateful to the PTA who brought this to our attention, because there's a lot of problems going on with that facility. There was no real PT in charge for that 2-week period that they're talking about. And I don't know that you can adequately do it via telehealth. And you know, she was already supervising at her max, and she told them that she couldn't supervise the PTA at Glen Haven. So I feel like there's some remediation that Dr. Hopkins can benefit from, for sure. And I'm struggling with having her retake the AZ law exam, which would then make this more of a disciplinary issue. I really feel that she needs to understand what the rules and regulations are for supervision and delegation, and so my initial thoughts.
Dr. Bustillo, I'm right there with you. I think that as a clinician, we get asked by people who are motivated typically by finances to do things outside of our scope or outside of what's correct. And even though she told them she couldn't, she still did. And it doesn't sound like she's got a good understanding, really, of what general supervision is versus on-site supervision and what the PTA can do as far as writing a progress note or not writing a progress note and co-signing. So I think, yes, she was put in a pickle, but I think I don't think she fully understands it. And so I'm more leaning toward non-disciplinary and just in CEUs and supervision. I'm kind of disappointed that she didn't understand the gravity of what this could have resulted in for her and didn't seek her own CEUs and really get educated about what this looks like in life as a practitioner. I think that the organization itself sounds like it's a hot mess, and the PTAs that are practicing without supervising therapists, that's an issue, right? Mm-hmm. Green Haven or Haven, wherever it is. But I think for Dr. Hopkins, she's got some educating to do for herself, or she's going to end up saying yes to something again that's going to end up having a much more significant impact. Those patients were cheated out of evaluations. They were cheated out of PT care. You know, we signed things that we shouldn't have been signing. Delegation probably there was none. You know what I mean? She didn't know the patients. She couldn't actively delegate to those PTAs because she didn't know the patients.
Absolutely.
Right?
Which is why I feel it's just a little bit more.
So, I mean, I could see that. That is significant. And I don't care if it's for 1 day or 2 weeks.
Right.
It's a good thing someone didn't get hurt by a PTA, and that the PTAs saw patients who were going to assume had acuity that was appropriate for them. But the delegation of those patients to those PTAs by Dr. Hopkins for those two weeks was inappropriate.
I tend to be more on what you're describing, Dr. King. You know, I see two completely different situations here. I see one where Dr. Hopkins handled the supervision of PTAs appropriately. She was in the clinic. She was deciphering whether it was appropriate to hand those patients off to the PTAs. Although the PTAs were scheduled with patients on progress note days, she was still seeing the patient, writing the assessment, updating the goals, doing everything that she should have been doing. Mm-hmm. And then you have this other situation where I don't know whether, you know, they were telling her, oh no, you're not going to be supervising these PTAs because we know you've already got two. But then maybe they're telling the PTAs over there, oh, Dr. Hopkins is your supervisor. Send her your notes and it's okay for you to do the progress note and she'll sign it off for you. And then maybe telling Dr. Hopkins, oh, we just need you to sign it off for billing purposes. You know, it's not a supervision issue, whatever the case might be. So, I think the thing that bothers me is, you know, why not ask what the rationale is. And if there's anything that I can say to Dr. Hopkins today is in the future, when something seems sketchy, it probably is. And you always want to make sure that you ask the rationale behind it before moving forward with something like that, if it doesn't feel right. But I am on the same page as you, Dr. King. I think that education is a good way to go. I don't necessarily see moving this into disciplinary action. I like that she immediately went to the statutes and started reading through them. It shows an effort on her part to make sure that she understands, you know, what is okay and what is not okay.
Any other discussion? Do we have a motion?
Dr. Bustillo, before motion lands on the table, I just wanted to take the opportunity to identify for the record that Mr. Greer exited the meeting at 9:50. He does intend to return, but he did notice me that he was leaving. So I just wanted, before you move into motions and deliberations, I just wanted to let you know that he's not here currently.
Thank you.
I'll make a motion as a starting point to for a non-disciplinary board action order with CEUs. I would say, I mean, it's hard to find CEUs specific to supervision that doesn't also include documentation, although that's probably lacking too because we didn't ask, but how was documentation of supervision handled, right? Was it there at all? So I'm going to say 6 hours. Of CEUs or for doc around supervision or some course that has a focus on PT supervision of PTAs and assistive personnel can be done online, needs to be completed and board approved, and I'd like it done within 3 months.
Second that.
And I know it goes without saying, but the CEUs would not count toward renewal of her license in 2026. What are your thoughts, Karen?
I just feel that she needs to be more responsible. And I don't know that this is enough. And I struggle.
Is there anything in addition other than jurisprudence that you feel like could help remediate her?
If there was the class or, you know, if we had a JAM module or something like that, that we could, you know, then I would feel better about it, but we don't.
I know this probably goes without saying, and thank you guys for taking the time to look into this case. It has been a long 8 months. I've had so much reflection, so much growth throughout all of this. As mentioned earlier, just printing out all of those rules and statutes, highlighting things like that, really taking the time to dig in. I did have to take the jurisprudence exam, just as the PTAs did, just as anybody to practice in this state has to go through. So I do know the ramifications of having to go through that. I do realize as well, it's on me, and also to take the time to dig into those continuing ed, to dig into the supervision and really nail down and be more of a leader in that regard versus just thrown into the lion's den per se. And it is my license on the line, and at the end of the day I do have to protect that. So thank you guys for taking the time to look into it. I really am appreciative.
Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that you were able to articulate the things that you've learned, and that does help me. Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready, Judy.
Just a point of 2 points of clarification. First yes. and foremost, do we have a second on this motion?
Dr. Hike.
Yeah.
Thank you. And secondly, Dr. King, you mentioned supervision. You were also kind of talking about documentation. Do you want straight up supervision, or do you want, or can it be documentation also that has a supervision element?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. It can be a course that has documentation as well as supervision, as long as there's a good amount of focus on supervision. And because it's really hard to find 6 CEUs just on supervision, right? Mm-hmm. It's usually in a mix of documentation, billing, coding, and supervision. Right. And so those, I don't want her to get stuck and unable to find anything that's just supervision.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. You're correct. It is difficult to find that many hours in direct supervision. Okay, are you ready for the vote? Okay. In case 2407 Carly Hopkins PT, it's been moved and seconded to issue a non-disciplinary order to include continuing education, which shall be completed in 3 months. The coursework must be pre-approved. They may be completed online and do not count towards renewal requirements. The continuing education shall be completed in the area of supervision for a minimum of 6 hours. Coursework should focus on supervision, but may also include elements of documentation, coding, and coding and billing. Dr. Bastia.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Greer is absent. Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Good luck to you, Dr. Hopkins. Thank you for being here. I appreciate your candor.
Thank you all. Have a great rest of your day.
I'd like to consider a motion to open a complaint against Christopher Coleman, PTA, who was the director of rehab of that facility.
Second.
Both for substandard care and supervision mm-hmm. issues as outlined in the investigative report.
Yeah. Okay, so that was with the potential violations or allegations of, I'm not sure if it's supposed to be violations or allegations, but it's 3244-4 and 3244-5 as it was indicated in the investigative report. Is that right, Karen?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. All right. Are you ready for that vote?
It would just be 5 since he's a PTA. 4 would be for a PT.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And then would it also include rule four around supervision, or that's just a PT as well?
Mr. Harris, does that matter?
R4-24-303-F4. I guess that's just for PT. It's about PT who provides general supervision.
Yeah, and this, and Madam Chair, members of the board, this is just to open up a complaint. Once the assigned investigator starts to look at it, other possible violations may come up that they'll work with the licensee on getting responses to.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Dr. Bustillo, I don't know if there was anybody else. Like, I was looking through the notes and everything at the potential of any other PTs, but the only ones I'm seeing are the name that you just gave and then the complainant, Ms. Blixt. I don't know, is there anybody else that you noticed in there?
No, there were a few people on that list, but I feel like this person as the director of rehab really made some errors.
Yeah.
And I feel like, truthfully, I feel like Ms. Blixt did the best she could in the situation that she was in. She reported and yeah. she was uncomfortable. She knew what was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want to fault her for that.
I'm in agreement with that for sure. I just didn't, I wanted to make sure I wasn't missing anybody else in here that we potentially should be opening a complaint against as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
This is something the investigators look into it. If they identify other issues with documentation and whatnot, that they'll bring it to us for potential, you know, opening an additional complaint based on their investigation.
Good point.
Yeah, and frankly, I'm open to doing that again. I mean, these are the situations that really have concerned us over and over about these facilities, is they seem to just be constantly doing this and frankly putting PTs in terrible positions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And PTAs,
absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And PTAs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So are we ready then with this motion for the vote?
Yes.
Yes.
It's been moved and seconded to open a complaint against Christopher Coleman to include among the potential violations ARS 3220445. Dr. Bustillo.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Thank you. Is everybody good or do we need a little break right now?
We need to stop and restart the recording. And I also want to inform you that Mr. Hernandez has joined the meeting
by
phone. So do you want a break with stopping and starting, or do you want to just stop and restart right away?
What's the purview of the group here?
Are you thinking maybe speak with Mr. Hernandez and then take a break?
We can do that, yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah, let me get back to my notes.
Okay, if we want to do that, then I'll stop the recording after Mr. Hernandez. That should give us a decent time frame.
Right.
To include with the break rather than stop, start. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Okay. So then returning back to agenda item 4C1.
Yes, this is review, consideration, and possible action on physical therapist or physical therapist assistant applicant under ARS 32-2028, Larry Hernandez. And Mr. Hernandez, you are on the call now.
Mr. Hernandez, I think you're muted. There we go.
This is Mr. Hernandez. Hello?
Yes.
I'm present.
Great. Thank you for being here. Are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes.
Great.
Mr. Hernandez, it's Kelly King. A couple questions. I see that you you let your license lapse in 2020. You've submitted some CEUs for competency and education. You're applying to renew your PTA license. You haven't practiced in 4 years. Can you tell us what your plans are? What setting do you anticipate practicing in?
My plan is to either stay at a outpatient facility, a local outpatient facility, or if not, it would be inpatient, which I've done both when I was employed as a PTA and a PT tech.
Okay, so it sounds like adult, acute, or ortho.
Yes, yes. I want to stay with what I've practiced with and what I'm a little bit more familiar with.
Are you concerned at all about having taken such a long break from treatment and getting back into the role?
To some extent, no. Education-wise, I believe that I will – there is time lapse. There's going to be some things that I'm going to be questioned about, but in the right setting, I believe under the right PT, I'll be guided and directed in the correct way. If I have questions that I would, I used to work with a PT that, I'm actually looking and hoping to go back and work with him. We've discussed, if I'm able to get my PT license back about working with him and like basically him guiding me. That's what I would like to do. Mm-hmm. But I mean, in the sense of patient care, as mm-hmm. in the way you treat people and the way, you know, to me, that doesn't change. That, I mean, there's laws that you need to follow. There's rules, there's policies. And on top of that, I mean, being empathetic and compassionate towards your patients is a big role. That's my personal opinion.
Yes, thank you. I read through your file. I don't recall, I apologize. Did you take CEUs around billing and documentation and coding or just treatment?
Treatment. I was wanting to find, I had some difficulty finding about like the billing or the documentation, but if I remember correctly, it was mostly evidence-based is what I was looking for to try to brush up on anything that I may have possibly forgotten.
Right, because in 4 years, there have definitely been some changes.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions?
Just a quick question, Mr. Hernandez, in terms of the CEU courses that you took, did you receive guidance in terms of which classes you felt would be appropriate if you were, you know, considering the work for this PT that you were referring to? Did that PT suggest these courses? Is that why you chose these courses?
No, they were from courses, basically the CEUs, I looked for evidence-based. I looked for things that I had dealt with in the past since that was what I was wanting. I don't want to do anything outside of what I had done, like as in home health or any of that. I wanted to stick with either inpatient setting or an outpatient setting. So that's where I look for.
It looks like you're mostly leaning towards outpatient with your choices. Then. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Do we have a motion?
I would move to approve Mr. Hernandez to take the AZ law exam.
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready.
Okay, so just point of clarification about the motion. You're approving his application for licensure after he completes the examinations, provides his transcripts, completes the application process. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. It has been moved and seconded to approve Larry Hernandez's application for licensure as a physical therapist assistant after successful completion of his application, including receipt of transcripts and passage of all required examinations. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Good luck to you, Mr. Hernandez. Welcome back to the profession.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, so it is now 10:26. I'm assuming we would like to stop the recording and take a break?
Yeah, like 10-minute break.
Okay. Perfect. The recording will stop at 10:26. The board will return at 10:36 and pick up the meeting then.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, this is Lee.